I chosen the topic BMP and cluster management way forward for small scale farmers to remain competitive and sustainable. Again, Sri Tarun raised the question, why is it better management? Why is best management? Why is it not good management? Better means it is always, there is room for improvement. When it is best, it's best. So that's why the word better management has been opted for, which means there is continued room for improvement. Okay, let me get on with my topic now. I'll talk a bit about aquaculture, change from a hunted to a farmed food fish supply, where aquaculture, challenges confronting aquaculture, the role of small-scale farmers, and way forward. In the food fish supplies, there have been major changes in the last 3 to 4 decades. As it was mentioned in the morning, there have been a gradual transition from a hunted to a farm supply to meet increase in demand from population increase in food consumption rates. Currently, aquaculture accounts for nearly 50% of global fish consumption, not fish production, but consumption. And the graph shows you the trend where, as Mr. Tarun pointed out, the capture fisheries, the hunted portion of our supplies has stabilized or on slight decrease, whereas aquaculture is going up and up. Currently, aquaculture accounts for 50%. As I said before, these are graphs which you have seen many a time. That's the total food fish supplies. That's the capture fisheries stabilizing, aquaculture going up, and currently aquaculture accounts for about 40% of the total food fish production. And this is the latest value and quantity of cultured product. So where does it come from? Asia-Pacific dominated aquaculture globally, accounts for over 90% of global production. And this gives you the trends over the last 3 decades. It's nearly 91.4%. Right throughout, the Asia-Pacific has been dominating aquaculture production. So 2007, it accounted for over 91% of the production. Of course, PR China is a mainstay in the region. Without China, the region's contribution to global aquaculture production is only about 30%. So obviously, countries like India and others in the region will have to step up their act a bit more. There is no way of catching up China, but nevertheless, we have to reduce this gap if possible. This is pictures from China cage culture in Hainan Island. You can see the density. Each of these roofs is a single farmer, a family. So that's how dense aquaculture can be in various places. This is a dominance of aquaculture again, 1980, 1990. What I'm trying to show is that the main regions of production has been in the Asia-Pacific over the last 4 decades, and it will continue to be so in the coming decades, Asia-Pacific dominating aquaculture. Who are the main producers? Small-scale farmers. Difficult to define, but from NACA's perspective, we have adhered to one definition, farmer-owned or leased, operated and managed. And why do I say so? If you take the case of farm size in India, in Indonesia, the average farm holding, is about 1.4% hectares. But there have been an increase in productivity, although the farm sizes remain almost at 1.14. Similarly, in Thailand, coastal aquaculture, the average farm size is 0.8 hectares. Freshwater ponds is 0.28 hectares. So the point is, in Vietnam catfish culture, which we talk a lot about 55% of the farms are under 4 hectares. But production per farm or per hectare averaged nearly 350 to 400 tons, the highest in the primary production sector overall globally. It's mind-boggling to think that you can produce 350 to 400 tons per hectare per crop, and they get 1.5 crops per year. So they are still small-scale in size, but their production, as Mr. Tarun pointed out, is it's very variable. A shrimp farmer would produce probably 2 tons or 3 tons per hectare. So catfish farmer would produce 300 tons. And all the farms in Vietnam, which is coming into more into the forefront, more as a global entity, still the great bulk of farms are small size. So the small take-home message is great bulk, small farm-owned, lease-operated and managed systems in this part of the world. My point is no difference to the rest of the primary production sectors in the region, as was pointed out. Example, you take rice. China is the world's biggest producer of rice. It produces nearly 182 million tons per year in 2006, 29% of global production, but the average farm size is 0.93 hectares. Then there is the dairy production. If I go around this table and ask who are the main dairy producers in the world, most people will say it's Australia and New Zealand. It's not so. India is the biggest dairy producer in the world. But the point is, they produce their milk with 210 million cows and buffaloes, but owned by 70 million families. That is, each family has average 3 buffaloes or cows, and the milk is produced and becomes the highest producer. So the point is that in the region, all primary producing sectors are very small scale and farmer-owned. So aquaculture will not be any different. This may be partly cultural, maybe partly land restrictions. The amount of land holdings that people can have is limited. You can't have a 1,000-hectare farm. So aquaculture in Asia is likely to remain small scale. And as a result, development strategies have to take this point into account. Of course, it is changing, as was pointed out. It is not a subsistence farming, though small in size. It can still be a commercial activity, ensuring food security and economically viable. A general slide on paradigm shift. This is something which myself and Brian Davy prepared about 3 years ago. What we looked at was phases of aquaculture development over the years. Phase 1, post-75, phase 2, 75 to 80, and so forth. What each phase was characterized by certain requirements called for by the public or the media. Say 20 years back, no one was worried about food quality and safety. We took it, they were minor issues. Then came eco-labeling, food quality and safety, and of course the standards came into being and so forth. And by 2020, our prediction is that it will be standard for everybody to assume that all food quality and safety requirements have been met. When you go to the supermarket and buy something in a packet, the packet will not contain how much of antibiotics was used or no antibiotics was used, but the packet will contain how much of greenhouse gases was emitted in producing a kilogram of that food product. And that's likely to be the paradigm shift that will come about. I don't know how many of you can see, since publication of that diagram, this is a menu card from a flight from Thai Air from Bangkok to Melbourne, which I do many a time. This is the important thing. I don't know how much you can read. What this says is this meal amounted for so much of greenhouse gas emissions. This is the airline menu. So this is the way we are moving. So they are very particular. Industry and all sectors are becoming extremely particular about the greenhouse gas emission. And this is where Mr. Tarun's point is, cars are some of the least greenhouse gas emitting fish produce that we can get. And maybe the world will have to give up eating salmon and shrimp and shift on to those humble fish if the world is to survive in 35 to 40 years' time. So these are issues. So there is a real paradigm shift. And this paradigm shift will have to take place whether we like it or not, but may take a bit of time. Okay. What are the modern global challenges that confront small-scale farmers? As we know, globalization and concurrent development in information technology brought about had new global initiatives, which were main drivers. There is a famous Brundtland report, which is Our Common Future, which resulted in the formation of the Convention on Biological Diversity in 1992. Then, of course, the world leaders got together and developed the Millennium Development Goal. The six primary goals were developed at the Rio Conference, the Millennium Development Goal. These, with the information technology becoming available, and all these changed the aspirations and the perceptions of the public at large. There was an increased awareness on food quality and safety. There were issues on development and sustainability. We must endeavor to minimize impacts on biodiversity. There was social responsibility. If we go back, food quality and safety are directly controlled by things like HACCP, Codex, and so forth. But those things don't include social responsibility. The new criteria or things which are coming in sustainable development, not only food quality and safety has to be assured and complied with, we have to take that all development does not impact biodiversity or minimally impacts biodiversity, and there is a social responsibility factor which is being built in. So how can small-scale farmers meet the modern global challenges? Adopting acceptable practices, also referred to as better management practices. BMPs are not new. They have been adopted in agriculture, water management, etc. But BMPs in aquaculture is relatively new, and we are glad, as we heard in the morning, it was initiated primarily in India. I know there was a parallel exercise in Indonesia, almost at the same, maybe slightly out of phase, but the one in India has gone forward very successfully. So what are BMPs? BMPs initially was developed, or the main objective was single-minded or single-factor driven. That was the fish, the shrimp culture, or the shrimp sector in India was devastated by a disease. And there was a program which was initiated by MPEDA and NACA, ways to find out how to revive this system. And then it came out that to revive the sector, if this disease factor was to be removed or minimized, it is not a single action that is needed. It's a host of action, a holistic approach which was needed. And from there evolved the what we call the better management practices. It encompasses a whole gamut of things. Feed management, improve aeration, improve water quality, etc. This is the first document on BMP, a globalized document, NACA, FAO, etc. We were awarded the Green Award by the World Bank for this document in 2006. This is now translated into 18 languages, if I'm right. Of course, this document has evolved since then. It has been improved, and adapted to specific situations. So BMPs, as I said in the morning, is developing with in concurrence with all stakeholders. The farmers are the most important link in the chain. Therefore, BMPs tend to be pragmatic and easily adaptable because the user is involved in its development. No major changes at any one time is needed if you get BMP, subject to continuous improvement. It is cost-effective and it's scientifically developed. And BMPs have been developed for major commodities, shrimp, catfish, etc. This is the catfish BMP which have been developed under Australian funding for the Mekong Delta region now. So the important thing is it encompasses everything, and it is a holistic approach. It's a farming practice which has room to improve as we go on, and it's easily adoptable and it's cost effective. And it is a framework. Of course, when you apply the BMPs in Andhra Pradesh or Gujarat, in one particular area, you have to modify these practices slightly, but you still work within that framework. We should not, when we talk about BMPs, we should not lose sight of the wood for the trees, the famous English proverb, right? We should not worry about the detail of whether salinity is this, that, but you get the framework. Within that framework, we adapt to a particular situation, a particular farming entity, and so forth. So BMPs, when adapted by small-scale farmers, will minimize risks, improve production efficiency, reduce cost of production, maximize economic returns. So BMPs provide, as I said in the morning, a path towards compliance to food safety and market requirements, participation in certification programs. Investing in BMPs could help small-scale farmers to maximize returns and sustain their livelihoods in the long term. How are BMPs developed? I will rush through this. All the risk factors are identified. There are many. That's the step one. For example, in shrimp culture, the risk factors are like this, talking of unscreened seed, not removing pond sludge, and so forth and so on. Then we do these risk factors. Once identified, you develop management interventions, new management interventions that are either developed or existing management methods are modified, revised and modified to address the identified risk factors. So examples of BMPs, cost of interventions, cost-benefit analysis, stock-only PCR, screen seed, for example, review pond bottom slide, install fish filters, maybe put security screens and so forth. So BMPs, when properly developed, are science-based. I repeat the word pragmatic. It is pragmatic. It's cost-effective and relatively easily adaptable. Then we test the interventions and validate them through pilot testing, which in India, NACA did in conjunction with MPEDA and CIBA and so forth. Then you have pilot demonstration studies, then farmer consultations and farmer training. Record keeping becomes an important part of the BMPs, and that also is an important part to meet the market requirements. Scientifically validated interventions are referred to as BMPs finally. What are the benefits of the BMPs? Well-defined BMPs can support producers to increase efficiency, reduce or mitigate the impacts of farming of the environment, improve food safety and quality of farm product, improve the social benefits from farming, and its social acceptability and sustainability. Then we come to why clusters. When a common resource such as water are used by many, best results are obtained when the stakeholders act in unison and not as individuals. And this is often restricted to small geographical area. Here is a common water resource. As I stated in the morning, individual farmers take and discharge independently, farm with diseased water, disease release water, all the result adjoining farms are affected. But if you have a cluster approach, cluster farmers, intake and discharge plan and interdependent. Consequently, if one farm is diseased, he will stop discharging or taking in water, and none of the adjoining farms will be affected. It's just one example of how clustering is advantageous. And also, clustering enables collective planning, decision making, and implementation of crop activities. It reduces risk, permits collective bargaining. Example, feed, the whole cluster can get together and buy the feed and obtain a fair discount. Approach a bank, it's more effective approaching a bank as a cluster than as an individual. It's easy for the cluster to get a loan. Maximize returns. A small farmer cannot meet the market demands in quantity by himself. But as a cluster, if they get together, they can supply the required quantity. Access to certification and improve markets. Now, this is a photograph where we work with some farmers in Thailand, southern Thailand, where clusters have been, BMPs are adopted, clusters are formed, and the markets have come to these clusters. Now, this is the case of special produce from that cluster, which is marketed by, purchased and marketed by Marks & Spencer in the UK. As you know, Marks & Spencer is a well-known brand name in the UK for both food and various things. And the farmers didn't go to the Marks & Spencer. Marks & Spencer heard about it and came to the cluster, and now they are a regular supplier to Marks & Spencer, which is, and it's the label says, farmed by small-scale farmers using BMPs, and they have also obtained a higher price for the produce. Oh, this is map of clusters in India, where I don't want to go into detail. So clusters are formed in small geographical areas, accessing a common water resource. And as I said before, cluster planning and decision-making, implementation of crop activities by a group of farmers through a participatory approach, accomplish common goal, reduce risk, maximize returns, and so forth. And then many advantages, many indirect advantages, regular information sharing among farmers on market information, disease, or technical improvements, cooperating as in selecting and testing, buying seeds from contract hatcheries, for example. Farmers in a cluster stocking at the same period, so you develop a water and a crop calendar so that you can meet the market requirements in quantity and quality. You develop a water calendar, when water is to be pumped in and pumped out and so forth, so you reduce the risk. Reduce contamination where there is disease outbreaks, so they are interconnected. Increase cooperation with input suppliers, as I said before. Buyers and processes, improvement of shared facilities, deepening inlets, drains. As an individual, it's a common property resource. Nobody is responsible. But if you're working as a cluster, then everybody puts in to deepen the channel, improve the water intake, and so forth, as a group. Meeting economies of scale, as mentioned, and possibility of group certification. You know, certification is costly for individual farmers, small-scale farmers, but as a group, certification can be obtained. And here again, there are specific examples. The examples I mentioned in respect to Thailand, it's a group certification, it's a group obtained. And even in India, group certification is becoming now a reality. Impact on production and management, increase production, reduce disease incidence, reduce FCR and increase efficiency of resource use, feed, seeds, and so forth, reduce pollution, reduce chemicals and antibiotics use. Social impacts, reduce cost and improve profits, reduce risk to small-scale farmers, increase cooperation and harmony, generate synergies in the community. bigger, better organized farmer groups, social harmony, and community development. This is the example which this slide probably has been shown 1,000 times by different people. The classic example of the improvement of the BMP, the MPDA, NACA example, which was quoted by Dr. Udo Upadhyay in the morning. What is important is from 2002 to 2009-10, there are 438 societies, 10,175 farmers now practicing BMPs. That's the production increase, not up to scale, but nevertheless. You can see the improvement. So by word of mouth and through NACSA and through various workshop days, this is an real illustration and embodiment to BMPs in action in the world. And this slide has been seen I don't know how many times. You can see with one state, number of states now, all coastal states adopting and going forward. So as I said in the morning, this may not be the panacea, but this is a very defined, well-recognized path so that the small-scale farmers will be able to survive and thrive in this challenging world, in this very globalized world where the demands are increasing on there, the level of compliance is increased. We all want to have food quality and safety, but the challenges are increasing, and this is the path to go. This is why we said. Social responsibility, a little bit on social responsibility. In the past, aquaculture has been found at fault due to lack of social responsibility. It is true, aquaculture gained a very bad name through the clearance of mangroves 20 years ago. Of course, now we know mangroves are the worst place to grow shrimp because it's acid soil, right? Then there was impacting on biodiversity, a real clearing of mangroves. Aquaculture is pinpointed that it is responsible for loss of biodiversity. But if you look into it very carefully, there is no explicit scientific evidence to show that aquaculture at large has impacted on biodiversity. There is very little explicit scientific evidence. There may be the odd case that is shown. So these are general statements that are made which discredits aquaculture. Therefore, politicians get a little bit weary when development on aquaculture is considered. Land grabbing, a major problem, not in this part of the world. When shrimp farming started blooming, particularly in South America, countries like Costa Rica and so forth, then unplanned development and adverse environmental impacts and so forth. Currently, most of the above have been taken care of. However, there still remains a social responsibility towards the community and society at large. And acting in a manner that does not impact the fellow stakeholders, society and environment in an adverse manner is important. So for example, I take the case of use of banned chemicals, contaminates the surrounding environment, impacts on surrounding farms. That's your social responsibility, not to do this. And this social responsibility can be inculcated, brought about very easily through clusters, right? Simple things. It's not big things that you're asking for. It is simple belief in each other that is important. Bringing in an alien species escapes to the environment, establishes itself in the wild. Potential negative impacts on biodiversity could occur. And public perception on alien species, not very favorable. And as I said before, aquaculture is pinpointed. So minimizing biodiversity impacts of aquaculture is a societal obligation. Alien species play a major role, however, in aquaculture. We have to concede that. The humble carp, Indian major carps are translocated in the whole of the region. Chinese carps are translocated through the whole of the region. So we have to look at whether these have impacted biodiversity, but all evidence indicates it's not so, but we need to assess them much more thoroughly and scientifically. So therefore, we have to be at least now consider of new introductions, be careful of new introductions and translocations at the present time. We cannot afford to make more mistakes on these issues. It is true that alien species are important to aquaculture as much as many of the staple food types. You name it, rice. Rice originated in China. It's now spread world over. The center of origin of rice is China. Wheat in South America, and so on and so it goes. But nobody talks about their alienness now. We use it as food. But aquaculture being the new kid on the block, everybody is looking at it with binoculars or magnifying glass. So we had to be careful. So minimizing biodiversity impacts of aquaculture is a societal obligation. And this relates to introduction of species. But we had to be careful on new introductions. I, as a person who has been working on aquaculture and alien species quite a bit, I know India, Malaysia, Sri Lanka, it's some of the countries till very recently took the view they will somehow revive monodon. The solution to the collapse of monodon is not to bring a new species. Whereas countries like Thailand brought in an exotic species. Now there is a new virus, exotic virus in the region, IMNV, right? We don't know where it is going. What I'm sorry is, which I heard, I won't mention the country. Now they're thinking, now the best way to counteract this virus or retain the industry is to bring in another species. To me, this is changing the pillow for the headache without solving the problem. And we don't know what disasters it would cause in 30 years' time. So we had to be careful, and we still don't know the long-term effects of vaname on the habitats and the environment. We are yet to know. But we know one thing, it has brought a new virus. We don't know what that virus would do, whether it would remain only in vaname or it could be attacking other crustacean and fish species. We don't know. Viruses mutate very rapidly, as we know. So these are things when we have to make decisions. It's important to retain livelihoods, retain support, but any decisions, major decisions in trying to do that should be associated with a complete risk analysis, and maybe there are other ways of keeping the industry or the sector going without taking drastic actions, the implications of which we cannot predict or think about at this stage. Just a word of caution. So the take-home message, certain aquaculture systems in different locations have to make adaptive changes. Through changes in the farming systems, make relevant technological and innovations for some. Best options for small-scale farmers, true, we don't say because we have been working on it, but we have enough evidence to believe that it has had impacts. Adopt BMPs, adopt a cost approach, by implication will be able to meet certification and all standards. I repeat, BMPs are not a certification process, not a standard. By adopting and practicing BMPs, by implication, because you are farming your product in a very responsible manner, it will, by implication, will be comply with all other requirements that the standards try to impose on you. And BMPs are not, it's a framework, it has to be changed and adopted, modified suitably, within a microclimate area or from farming system to system. So it's not a blueprint that can be taken everywhere. It's a framework that has to be adapted. Aquaculture may also be an option for millions of primary producers whose livelihood is at risk. in the foreseeable future, the world will look up to small-scale farmers. Small-scale systems will likely produce the least amount of greenhouse gases. Thank you. That's my famous slide. The greatest disease of all is hunger. The Lord Buddha said that 2,500 years ago. But finding a day's protein needs may not be that easy to 1 billion people right now. Thank you very much indeed.